and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app, or listen on the website by visiting nickcraig.com. Want to thank the Law Group here in Wilmington for their support of the program this morning. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. More details on them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. What is a jam-packed Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show? We start off with some major international news this morning. After just four votes of the Papal Conclave, Cardinal Robert Francis Provost was elected Pope yesterday, the first American Pope in the 2,000-year history of the Catholic Church. He is 69 years old, a native of Chicago, and has taken the name Pope Leo XIV. He spoke to a packed crowd in St. Peter's Square yesterday afternoon with this announcement. It was announced, of course, through the white smoke that the Pope had been selected about 45 or so minutes later. One of the deacons came out on the balcony at St. Peter's Square, outside of St. Peter's Basilica, announced that the new Pope had been selected and announced that it was the first U.S. Pope ever in the history of the Catholic Church. A lot of comments about the Pope. He addressed the crowds in both Italian and Spanish, did not mention anything in English, no English words during his brief comments yesterday. And of course, giving a special mention to his former diocese in Peru, where he has spent the vast majority of his life as his life in ministry. He is a native, as I mentioned, of Chicago, Illinois. He went to Villanova University. He's got a math degree from Villanova. And interestingly enough, he's only 69 years old, which, in terms of popes, is relatively young, indicating, that there's a strong possibility for the next 15 to 20 years, unless he decides to step out of the position or there are some unforeseen health scenario arises, that he will be the Pope for a significant amount of time leading the Roman Catholic Church. A lot of questions about how the Pope will operate. There's plenty of criticism from Catholics on the way in which Pope Francis got himself into maybe controversy or conflict, international issues that were not necessarily not necessarily relevant for the Pope to get himself invested in. We'll see what Pope Leo XIV does as it relates to that, and obviously something that we'll be seeing anytime the Pope says something or makes comments as it relates to international issues, anything political. There's always some news about it, so obviously we'll take a look at those details as they come available. But just after four votes, two days, one vote on Wednesday night and then three votes yesterday, the Cardinal Robert Provost has been elected the first American-born Pope. We'll obviously continue to follow that in the weeks and months and years to come. Taking a look at some other news this morning that we are keeping an eye on, President Donald Trump yesterday announcing a major economic deal as it relates to a trade deal with Britain. Yesterday morning, we talked about the announcement that was set to take place in the Oval Office about 10 o'clock yesterday morning, and it in fact did. That's when President Donald Trump announced that tariffs on most country, tariffs and this trade deal has officially come forward with Great Britain. The UK Prime Minister announcing in a similar announcement, talking about this trade deal between the US and the UK, talking about it as a significant agreement. And I didn't really even realize this, but apparently the US and the UK have been discussing trade for like 25 years. That's according to Trump. And they've really yet to come up with some sort of really good deal that works out for both countries. And so the president said this: they all said that this is a pipe dream, and this was a tough one. This is much tougher, I think, than any other deal because they've been at it for so many years, decades, trying to make this deal. And it's very conclusive. It's a great deal. It's a very great step for the United States. The prime minister backing that up, saying, quote, "This is going to boost trade between and across our countries. It's going to not only protect jobs, but create jobs opening market access. We've managed to achieve what many people have tried to achieve for many years, with the UK Prime Minister backing up the fact that this is a major deal, and the details of it are pretty interesting. So there's going to be a 10% tariff that continues on the UK, so nobody is getting a free lunch with this, but there are going to be major cuts as it relates to things like British auto, steel, and other sorts of metals, aluminum, things of that nature coming out of this trade agreement. So with that, UK officials said that Trump's auto tariffs would go from 27.5% to 10% on a quota of 100,000 vehicles, and import taxes on steel and aluminum would go from 25% to zero. So some very significant details there as it relates to trade. The UK government also said that it would reduce tariffs on more than 25,000 U.S. products and goods that currently go into the country, with an average tax or a tariff rate of 1.8% for many, many goods, thousands of goods going into the United Kingdom. Again, this has been a deal that has apparently not been able to be made for many, many years, and it is finally something that, due to the work of the Trump administration, the Treasury Secretary, and other folks, this has finally come forward now, and it is officially set to officially take place with these tariffs between the United States, a much better trade deal between the U.S. and the United Kingdom. This is one of many deals that this administration is looking to make as Trump continues with his thought that the United States is being taken advantage of as it relates to trade. Whether you agree with him or not, that is where he stands on issues of trade, and he is continuing to push it forward, this major deal with the UK. Hopefully some more deals come alongside and come online over the next couple of weeks and months as the president continues with the program and continues working down this path. So we'll, of course, keep an eye on all of that. Well, yesterday morning, I had the pleasure of watching the Ladies of the View. I sat through and painfully watched through the program. So you didn't have to do it yesterday. President Joe Biden and his wife both appearing on The View for one of their first big media appearances since leaving the Oval Office. The first half of the show was just Joe Biden and the Ladies of the View. The second half of the show was Jill Biden came out. By the way, there's this really weird picture. I was going to wait to show it, but I guess I'll bring it up now. So Joe Biden, they come back from a commercial break, and of course they're like, oh, and now welcome Dr. Jill Biden, and the crowd goes nuts. Look at this picture. So Jill Biden comes out, and Joe puts his hand out to shake her hand. She shakes it because that's what you do when somebody puts their hand out indicating they want to shake your hand. Just this really weird exchange, just kind of going to show. And the picture itself, Joe Biden looks like he is a plank of wood. You've just got this really uncomfortable scene where Joe just does not know how to interact with his wife of like 47 years on national television. They shake hands, then she goes in to give him a hug. Just a very weird scenario, and just a very odd still frame of The View yesterday when Jill Biden came out. I'll give the Ladies of The View credit, at least a couple of them, for asking some decent questions. The whole show was nothing more than it was nothing more than to cover for Joe Biden. The whole show primarily was about how things that Joe did weren't as they seemed. Things that Harris did, his vice president, who then became the presidential nominee, wasn't what it seemed. And Orange Man is bad. And this guy, Trump, is destroying the country. There were a couple of questions, which I've got some audio and video on this morning that were decent, but Joe was in his typical form, stumbling around answers, really unable to give any sort of succinct response to the questions, a lot of veering off. And this is his thing that he's been doing more as of late. We saw it in the waning days of his presidency. Anytime he's talking to the media, he will be, going down a path on something, and then he'll just stop cold in his tracks and say, I'm not supposed to get into that, or I shouldn't mention that, or I don't have time to mention. Like, he's in the middle of a thought, and he is stopping himself to say, I can't continue to say this, or I'm not supposed to continue to say this, when that's not the fact at all. The reality is he is struggling to speak. He is struggling to allow thoughts to come out of his mouth. He's struggling to answer the question. And instead of answering it, he goes down this like 30-second diatribe that doesn't make a lot of sense and goes, and, you know, I told you I'd be shorter on my responses. I mean, but he doesn't answer the question. And it's not even close to answering many of the questions. It was a very bizarre interview. I suffered through the whole thing, so you didn't have to, but I do have a bunch of clips this morning, so I will preemptively apologize for you having to suffer through at least a little bit of The View. One of the first questions right off the bat, Joe Biden dropped out of the race. Was that a good idea or not?
Mr. President, last time you were here was a little over a month before the election, and you had made the selfless and very difficult decision, I'm sure, to step aside, and Democrats were feeling optimistic about the vice president's chances of winning the presidency. But then election night came, and it was like 2016 all over again. Yeah. So why do you think the vice president lost, and were you surprised?
Oh. I wasn't surprised, not because I didn't think the vice president was the most qualified person to be president, and she is. She's mm-hmm. qualified to be president of the United States of America. Right. But I was surprised. I wasn't surprised because they went the route of the sexist route, all the whole route. I mean, this is a woman. She's this. She's that.
Now, I got to stop old Joe Biden here. The sexist route. I followed this presidential campaign very closely. I watched Trump a lot of his rallies. He did like 900 events or something during the presidential campaign. It was an absurd amount of events he did. I don't ever remember the argument being that Kamala Harris is a woman, therefore she can't be president. This is the same shit that the Democrats pulled in 2016. The reason Hillary Clinton lost is because she's a woman. The campaign wasn't about her being a woman at all. I don't remember that being a serious discussion. Now, I do remember talking about her failures as the vice president. I do remember discussions about her, what I would call very subpar leadership and things that she was delegated to deal with, like, oh, I don't know, the border. Remember Border Czar Harris? I remember discussions of that. Nothing about the fact that she's a woman. I don't remember Trump going out on stage and saying, vote for me, I'm a man. Women are stupid. Don't vote for them. I don't remember that ever taking place in this presidential election at all. Immediate deflection from Joe Biden. And of course, nobody on the View panel, the cackling group of women, none of them had the audacity to challenge him on that point and say, hey, that's a fair thing if it happened. Do you have any evidence of this? Like, can you point to examples of Trump and Trump allies going out on stage and saying, don't vote for Kamala Harris, she's a woman? I don't remember that ever happening. A blatant lie from Joe Biden, and he doubles down.
I've never seen quite as successful and a consistent campaign undercutting the notion that a woman couldn't lead the country and a
never
woman
happened.
Of mixed race.
Yeah.
And a woman of mixed race. So, again, folks, I'm not asking this facetiously. I genuinely do not remember listening to President Donald Trump talk about the fact that Kamala Harris is mixed race and is a woman. I just don't remember that being part of the discussion. I went to a handful of Trump events last year, one of his last rallies in Kinston. There was no discussion of Harris being a woman. There was no discussion of Kamala Harris's race at all. Like, it just wasn't even discussed or talked about because it wasn't relevant. Right? See, this is the issue with the left and their ridiculous identity politics. They take this stuff so seriously about race and gender, and they project on everybody else when things don't go their way. Well, it must have been because of her race, or it must have been because of her gender. The issues that President Donald Trump ran on were immigration, aka the border, the economy, and crime. Those were his three big issues. And none of those have anything to do with, well, Kamala Harris is a woman, so she's incapable of dealing with this. Now, you could argue, and he did, that as the border czar, she was incapable of dealing with the border. That's an obvious fact. But there was never any discussion, oh, well, she's a woman. A woman, so she doesn't have to, she's incapable of dealing with that. I just don't ever remember that happening at all. And I sure as hell don't remember him talking about her race as of any relevant point in this presidential election. Makes no sense.
And they played that to a fairly well. In addition to that, one of the things happened, if you notice, and I'm going to be shorter, okay? I promise. Okay. She said, don't be Joe Biden, be short.
I said that to him.
Anyway, make a long story short, all kidding aside, think about it. Liberal democracies all across America, all across the world lost last time out.
Yeah.
All across America. I think we underestimate the phenomenal negative impact that COVID had and the pandemic had on people, on attitudes, on optimism, on a whole range of things. So I was very disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. And the only thing that surprised me is the excess to which they've gone in some of the attacks they've made.
I don't know about, I have no idea what he's talking about there at the end. Now, I actually do kind of agree with the president as to the lingering effects of COVID as it relates to people's optimism. I would argue in many cases, trust of government. I think that's a valid point. I have no idea what he's talking about, their continued attacks. Is he going back to the fact that she's a woman thing? I don't have any recollection of that ever taking place in this campaign as a major talking point that could have caused Harris to lose the election. And it is interesting that he says he wasn't surprised. And nobody really should be surprised. I mean, if you looked at the political polling leading up to the election, it was very clear that unless the polls were dead wrong, Trump was going to be the next president of the United States. The vast majority of political polling in the last 6 weeks ahead of November's election very clearly showed that this was Trump's race to lose. He was up in almost all of the major battleground states. Yeah, I think he only needed, what, 4 of 7 or 5 of 7 to win? He was up in all of them, all 7 of them. Very close margins in some, sure, I'll give you that. But he was polling well in every single battleground state. And the math of winning a presidential election is through the Electoral College, to the chagrin of Democrats, 270. That's the magic number. Popular vote doesn't matter. None of this other stuff matters. It's winning swing states and getting to 270 electoral votes. That's the process. Harris was unsuccessful in doing that. And there's a variety of reasons for it. I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that she was a woman. I have no idea what Joe Biden's talking about. But he was asked, you know, hey, if you didn't drop out of the race, do you think you could have won? Here's old Joe's response to that.
Well, Mr. President, you had previously said that you thought that you would have won. Since then, Donald Trump won all the battleground states and made inroads with almost every major demographic, from working class voters to Hispanic men to black men. Knowing what you know now, do you think you would have beat him?
Yeah, he's still got 7 million fewer votes.
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people didn't show up. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, they're very close in those toss-up states. It was wasn't a slam dunk. Every time I've been on the show, which I've been fortunate to be on more than once. Thanks for having me. Is that we talk? You guys don't focus on as much, and I think it's good on polling numbers. But let me put it this way. He's had the worst 100 days any president's ever had.
Yeah, that's a fact,
I would not say honesty's been a strong point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. President.
Wow. Very great insight there from Joe Biden. Well, you know, it was close in some of the swing states. Yeah, absolutely, Joe. That's kind of the whole purpose. They're swing states. They're not going to be a blowout in one direction or the other. We're not talking about a state like New York or California or a super red state like Oklahoma and Kansas, right? Yes, we're talking about swing states where, in fact, margins are very close. I know this is a kind of a hard thing for Joe Biden to look at, but yes, it in fact was close. It is inherently supposed to be close. That's built into the name of swing states. And I find this to be a very interesting argument. You're seeing it from some, I guess, what I'll call in denial Democrats on the left. They continue going back to this point that, well, you know, it wasn't a slam dunk, to quote Joe Biden's words. It wasn't a slam dunk election for Trump because he didn't, you know, the margins in some of these states were pretty close. Joe, that's not how the race is won. Joe Biden has been in politics for 70 freaking years. He's been a vice president for 8. He was the sitting president of the United States for 4 years. He doesn't know the process. He doesn't understand that elections are in fact won by small margins and small majorities in very specific counties in swing states. I mean, that's how elections are won. And he brings up, well, he got 7 fewer million votes than me, so I probably would have won. No, Joe, you would have lost as well. Trump won 7 of 7 swing states and the popular vote. And I don't know why the Democrats are continuing with this odd idea that, oh, well, you know, it was pretty close race, so we didn't really lose. No, no, you did in fact lose. You guys got annihilated. You guys got killed at the ballot box. You should have won at least 1 or 2 swing states. Should have. That's what some of the math would show. Probabilistically, you should have won at least 1 of the 7 swing states. They didn't win any of them. Trump cleaned house in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, in North Carolina, in Nevada. He killed in these states. Oh, but, you know, he only won by a little bit here. As was not a slam dunk, Jack. Doesn't make any sense. This is denial from the left as to their failures as it related to the last presidential election. Trump got 312 electoral votes. Harris got 226. That is an overwhelming victory in the Electoral College. That's not a close race. You can, and we have had close races in the past. This was not one of them. But for whatever reason, Democrats seem to think that if they just continue with this notion that they didn't really lose by that much in the grand scheme of things, that everything is better, that the problems really aren't that severe. And it really wasn't that big of an election loss, even though they lost the White House, completely lost control of the Senate, and were unable to gain a majority in the House. And that's the math. Those are the statistics coming out of the November 2024 election. So I guess you can gaslight Democrats as much as you want. You can gaslight your voting bloc to make them feel better that they didn't get their clocks cleaned in November. But reality shows a very different story than what you heard there from Joe Biden. We'll then transition into the Harris campaign. An interesting question about her short-lived campaign and some of the ways that she went about it. This is very interesting.
Mr. President, some have even argued that leaving the race and endorsing your vice president, Vice President Harris, over 100 days before the election hampered her campaign.
Well, you know,
what do you say to those critics?
I say, number one, that there were still 6 full months. She was in every aspect, every decision I made, every decision we made. And I don't think I hope I didn't sound the wrong way. I don't think anybody thought we'd be successful as we were. I don't think anybody thought we'd pass the Recovery Act. I don't think anybody thought we'd deal with chips and science. I don't think anybody think we'd have all we got done in a close race. Think about it.
Yeah.
We got more major legislation passed to fundamentally change the direction of the country.
True.
Than any president has in a long, long time.
Decades.
He's done more than any other president in a long, 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 long time. So there you go. So she should have won because he was so successful. And he did things that have been done in a long, 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 long time. Unreal. The successes of the administration. What successes? They point to the CHIPS Act, sure. What else are you going to point to? What are your other major policy things? The Green New Deal, the Inflation Reduction Act? This is revisionist history, ladies and gentlemen. If President Joe Biden had such a successful 4 years in the Oval Office as he likes to claim, which is fine. That's his opinion. And he's allowed to feel that way. He is allowed to say, I believe I had the most successful presidential election or the successful presidency in the United States of America. He is fine to say that. But I would challenge that with the fact that they didn't win. If everything was going so well, if everything was so great, then why did voters across the United States of America, Joe Biden said it in an earlier clip, liberal democracies all over the country, we didn't have a good run at it. Why was that the case then? I mean, these two things do not equate. You could not have been having the most remarkable presidency that's ever existed, and then at the same time, be of the mindset that you lost and it wasn't because of your policies. It wasn't because of your campaign. It wasn't because of the variety of issues in the campaign. That just doesn't make any sense. It's just more rambling from Joe Biden.
And so we're in a situation where we came to office and we agreed on two things. One, I was sick and tired of trickle-down economics. And my dad used to say, not a whole lot trickle down in his kitchen table.
Ah, yes.
And so we built the economy from the middle out and the bottom up. The strongest economy in the world when we left. That's not hyperbole. That's a fact.
Strongest economy in the world, yet couldn't convince voters to vote for
it. In one term that any president has in American history. I mean, so my point is that we had a very successful effort to change the direction of the country, and we did. And she was every single part of that. It wasn't like she was a bias. And look, what I realize is, I was a vice president once.
Right. Oh, really?
And, you are an integral part. I was with Barack. He was a great president. Mm-hmm. But, I just think that it was a very tough year.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Why? Why was it such a tough year across the board? Why would you have such a tough year if everything was so great? Why would everything have fallen apart in the way in which it did if things were so great? Folks, this doesn't make any sense. This interview is the ramblings of a man in mental decline and, I would argue, in complete and total denial of the facts. I would argue that this is a complete denial of everything surrounding 4 years of Joe Biden and a failed presidential campaign for his vice president. I don't see any way that you can sugarcoat it or paint a picture that is different from that. I cannot fathom how Joe Biden or any Democrat believes that they had such a successful campaign but could not convince American voters to support them at ballot boxes in November of last year. I fail to understand that, and I refuse to believe it because the facts don't back that up. It's a feeling that Joe Biden has, sure. He feels that he had a great presidential campaign. I would argue the American people have a very different thought. And that, of course, is based on the election results of November of 2024. I've got more from Joe Biden in his illustrious return from On The View. His wife will join him in some clips coming up as well. I want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington this morning. When legal challenges arise, trust the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or again, their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication that you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. More from Joe Biden on The View coming up after this as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Friday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. YouTube not very happy with me showing these view clips, noting that I'm playing copyrighted content, so I'm going to play them in a little bit of a different form. But continuing with Joe Biden's appearance on The View yesterday, his first really big sit-down media interview since leaving the Oval Office in January 20th of this year. And he was talking about the Harris campaign. Questions, you know, she only had a little over 100 days to run a campaign. How do you think that you set her up? And Joe had some interesting takes and comments on that.
Let me just follow up with this, because when the vice president was here, I asked her if she would have done something differently than your administration over the past 4 years. And because of all the successes that your administration had, I think her response was, there is not a thing that comes to mind. Now, that answer was weaponized against her. And there has been some reporting that you encouraged her for there to be no daylight between the two of you. First, is that true? And do you think in retrospect that she should have tried to differentiate all the wins that your administration had?
This is a key point right here, right? Because this is arguably the biggest flub that Harris had. And she, of course, was on The View when she said this. But overall, this was the issue with the Harris campaign. It was continuing with the Joe Biden legacy. I mean, she was asked point blank, would you make any substantial or significant changes? And she said no. Now, from Joe Biden's standpoint, that is perfect because there were no issues with the Joe Biden campaign. Right? There were no problems as it related to his presidency. Yet, if that were true, as mentioning before the break, if that was the case, then why didn't they have a more successful election in November of last year? Right? So that doesn't add up. Let's hear what Joe's response to this is.
Well, look, first of all, I did not advise her to say that.
No,
number
sure.
one. Like I said, I was vice president. I understand the role. Number one. Number two, I think she was talking about wouldn't have changed the successes we've had, not as opposed to that we wouldn't change anything at all. She has to be her own person. Mm-hmm. And she was. And so I think that was used in a way that is contrary to what she meant by when.
So that's revisionist history. That's what I was just talking about. So she didn't mean, when she said she wouldn't make any changes, that's not what she meant. She talked about not changing. She meant that she wouldn't change the successes. That doesn't make any sense at all. Of course, you're not going to change the successes that you had. If it's a success, why would you change it? Now, what she said was very clear. And I don't know whether or not Joe Biden told her or the combined campaigns discussed, you know, don't leave any daylight between Joe and Kamala. Make sure that they're one unified team in all of this. No, she meant exactly what she said, which is that she would not make any changes. Now, this is, of course, an issue for Democrats because the American public was not happy with what they were seeing out of the Democrat Party. The American public was not happy with what they were seeing out of Democrat politics. So that is, in fact, an issue, but it's a complete rewriting of history and what was said and done.
When she said that, mm-hmm. and I think that, you know, she was part of every success we had. We'd argue like hell, by the way. No.
That's good. Yeah.
We'd sit and say, well, what about this provision? No, Joe, I don't like that. Well, anyway, we worked it out. Mm-hmm. It was a mutual thing. Yeah. But like I said, I'll lay you 8-5 if when that election started, I told you we were going to get any of that done. None of you would have thought it happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And not because of negative. I mean, it was. Anyway.
Anyway. So there's the Harris campaign. No daylight. Keep the campaigns together. Keep everything rolling as normal within the campaign. Don't change anything, because we've had all of these great successes, even though the American people had the opinion that that was not actually the case. That the Democrats screwed up. It's really that simple. It's not overly complicated. The Democrats did not have a good 4 years in the Oval Office. The economy, inflation, border security, immigration were big issues that the Democrats had. They struggled to deal with any of those issues. And that was actually that's actually the next clip I've got here. A question about Joe Biden not understanding the American people, not understanding the issues that were affecting the American people. And was that a mistake?
You announced that you wouldn't be seeking re-election. Only 28% of the country thought that the country was on the right track. Now, you are understandably very proud of many achievements in your administration. For responsibility for not hearing the concerns of voters on the border security or cost of living sooner. And do you take any responsibility for Trump's re-election?
Yes. I do, because, look, I was in charge and he won. So, you know, I take responsibility, number one. But number two, you know, you remember we put together a commission leading with one of the most conservative members of the United States Senate from Oklahoma running it. Mm-hmm. We came up with a significant means by which we could deal with the border. Yeah. What did Trump do? He got on the telephone and he called Republicans, do not support it. It's legal. It'll work. It'll make Biden look good. Don't do it. Yeah. And they backed off. They backed off.
Can't someone be impeached for something like that?
Joy Behar. Shouldn't somebody be impeached for that? For what? The former president of the United States calling members of Congress and giving them his opinion? It's an impeachable offense. It's all the Democrats got. We'll just impeach him, I guess. That's a great solution. That's a phenomenal solution. We'll just impeach. It's a pretty good idea. We don't like what Trump is doing. We don't like that he called and blocked Biden's idea that, we need to continue with ridiculous policies as it relates to the border. Remember, it was Joe Biden that said he had no control. It was Joe Biden that said there was nothing that he could do as it relates to the border. There was nothing that he could do. It had to come through Congress. It had to be Congress that went forward with this. That was a lie. That was not true. That was not a legitimate reason for why the border was as open as it was. The answer was very simple. Joe Biden had the authority to deal with immigration. He chose that he didn't want to deal with immigration. He decided that he was going to just allow it to run amok, which is exactly what he did. The American people were very frustrated with that and decided to send the Democrats packing. It's really not that complicated. This is a major policy flub by the previous administration. This is how they chose to operate. This is how they chose to run their presidential campaign. These are the issues that they decided they didn't want to deal with. They didn't deal with them. They tried blaming Congress for it not being dealt with. And lo and behold, turns out that wasn't a good enough response for the American people. More from Joe Biden.
Well, secondly, look, what we didn't have a chance to do, and I've been advised not to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. No one thought I could get past an over a trillion dollar plan to rebuild the country. Well, we made a lot of commitments, and we, you know, billion-dollar tunnels going through the for Amtrak, bridges, so on. But we weren't quite as good as he was about advertising. Yeah. There's nothing to say Biden brought you this.
Yeah.
There's nothing saying the Democrats brought you this. And we knew none of this would occur for another 6 months to 2 years. Mm-hmm. It takes time to do all that. I mean, for example, we invented the computer chip. It's a multi-trillion-dollar future. But guess what? Because it was cheaper to get cheaper labor, they sent it overseas, brought the product back home, we lost control. Mm-hmm. And what happened? we found out we didn't have the sources to do it anymore. So when I got in the plane, I went to South Korea, I went to all, anyway, I went all through Asia, and I got them all to come back and invest several trillion dollars in investments to rebuild these facilities here and us take control of this. That's why, you know, there's multiple parts to make a car. You need all these. And so, but none of it would take place immediately. The same way with, for example.
So I guess the argument here that Joe Biden is making is they didn't do a good enough job advertising their successes. Well, that's a big problem, Joe. That's politics 101. If you're going to be passing legislation, if you're going to be working on things that you believe are great and good for the American people, you sure as hell need to be able to advertise them. It's simple politics. So that's a failure of the previous administration. They did all of these phenomenal, wonderful things, but it didn't say brought to you by Joe Biden. It didn't say brought to you by the Democrats. That's your own fault. Politics is a sport in which you need to convince people that what you're doing is the best, or at least better than what the alternative is. It's a very simple strategy. It's a very simple idea in politics. And for whatever reason, Joe Biden and his cadre of folks on the left decided that it was not a good idea to promote those things, decided it was not a good idea to stamp on those things brought to you by the Democrat Party. That was a major failure on behalf of Joe Biden. More from
him. I don't know what last thing I'll say. But one of the things I'm proudest of working for is changing the way in which drug companies can charge for prescriptions.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a fundamental change. It's changing people's lives. Yeah. They can now afford the medicine they need. But it just was kicking in. And so that was a mistake to not be able to advertise, figuratively speaking, and actually that what was doing. But we knew, and I knew this, I knew it wasn't going to happen right away.
What?
The projects, the benefits. How do you lead the world without having the best infrastructure in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best health care in the world? How do you lead the world without having the best education system in the world? How do you lead the world when you don't have...
How do you lead the world without the best education? How do you lead the way without the best?
What? I think he was trying to say, how do you lead the world without the best education? That he's struggling to get that out of his mouth. So they just didn't do a good job advertising it, I guess. That's the takeaway. Not that things weren't good. Not that the policies didn't suck. The ideas weren't terrible and very unpopular with the American people. It was the fact that they didn't advertise the issues enough. How about Joe Biden's cognitive ability? That's been a major discussion. It was one of the reasons that he stepped aside about 115 days before the presidential election to provide the American voters with his vice president, Kamala Harris, as the alternative to him. What does he have to say about his cognitive ability?
Mr. President, since you left office, there have been a number of books that have come out deeply sourced from Democratic sources that claim in your final year there was a dramatic decline in your cognitive abilities in the final year of your presidency. What is your response to these allegations, or are these sources wrong?
They are wrong. There's nothing to sustain that. Number one. Number two, you know.
Nothing, not even this interview to sustain that. We shouldn't have the best. Nothing to sustain that at all.
Think of what we're left with. We're left with a circumstance where we had an insurrection when I started.
Oh, okay.
Not since the Civil War. We had a circumstance where we were in a position that the pandemic, because of the incompetence of the last outfit,
right,
end up over a million people dying. And we're also in a situation where we found ourselves unable to deal with a lot of just basic issues, and which I won't go into in the interest of time. And so we went to work, and we got it done. And, one of the things
one of the things...
I'm talking too long. So now Dr. Jill has to bail him out of this. Dr. Jill comes swooping in and bails Joe Biden out. Take a listen to this.
I think is that the people who wrote those books were not in the White House with us. Ah. And they didn't see how hard Joe worked every single day. I mean, he'd get up, he'd put in a full day, and then at night I'd be in bed, you know, reading my book, and he was still on the phone reading his briefings, working with staff. I mean, it was nonstop. It's the White House, being president is not like a job. It's a lifestyle. It's a life that you live. You live it 24 hours a day. That phone can ring at 11 o'clock at night or 2 in the morning. It's constant. You never leave it. And Joe worked really hard. I think he was a great president. And if you look at things today...
Hey, he was a great president. There you go. So I guess there's no validity in any of that at all. All the books weren't written by people in the White House. So contrary to what the American people saw with their own eyes, which is actually the next clip, none of that actually happened. It wasn't true. He was working from 6 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night, according to Dr. Jill. He was all over the place constantly. Now, I don't have any idea, and I'm not going to sit here and claim that Joe Biden was sleeping every single day. But it was patently obvious that in the last couple of years of his presidency, he was losing his sharpness. That's obvious. Every single time that he went out and spoke, whether it was at a public event, some sort of press event at the Oval Office or somewhere in the White House or something related to him, it was always a disaster. I mean, this guy was struggling to put sentences together on a regular basis. Whoopi Goldberg had the question about the debate, the disastrous July debate that really started this whole ball in motion.
Started. Yep. Both sides with this, can't do this, this needs to stop. Why do you think that caught fire? Why do you think people bought into it, especially the Democrats?
Well, first of all, we still were winning primaries. We were still doing everything. The Democratic Party at large didn't buy into it, but the Democratic leadership and some of the very significant contributors did, even though we raised enormous. Like when I left the race, Kamala had hundreds of millions of dollars. She had the best organized campaign. Every state was organized, et cetera. But, you know, what happens is that it took on a life of its own. And I had a very, I'm going to say something outrageous. I've not lost many debates in my life. I've been pretty good at doing that. I was sick. I was, no excuse, but I was not.
It's an explanation.
I had a bad, bad night.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm on cover.
Did you immediately know you had a bad night?
Yeah, I did. But even after that, the polls just showed me down by 2 points. Mm-hmm.
And Hannah, you know, Joe came on. I went onto the stage after the debate. I mean, we all saw it. It was terrible. So Joe looked at me and he said, I'll use screwed up. He said, he didn't say that. And I said,
We all know Joe Biden. We know what he said.
And I said, yeah, you did, Joe. But we have hundreds of people waiting for us. Put your shoulders back. Walk out there. You know, be who you are. And we were not going to let 90 minutes of a debate define his presidency and all those years of service.
Yeah. This is the first time I'm hearing this. There was a complete and total deflection after the debate took place that it wasn't that bad. So Joe and his wife just admitted that they had screwed up. Not that they necessarily screwed up. Joe just had a bad night. He was sick. Not an excuse, but he was sick. I mean, we've all been sick before, sure. What you saw on that stage in, was it mid-July of last year, was not somebody that was sick. It was not somebody that had a little sinus headache or a little bit of a fever or some sort of respiratory illness. It was a guy in a failing cognitive state. It was a guy that was struggling to coherently speak and explain what was happening and answer questions given to him by the moderators. You and I all watched this unfold live on national television. We saw Joe Biden staring into space for minutes on end anytime Trump was speaking. I mean, you saw the camera angles. He's just glancing off into nowhere land. Then he gets asked questions, and he doesn't have any answer. He's completely butchering everything that they asked him. That debate was a disaster. Right after the debate, though, we were told it wasn't that bad. The White House, the Biden campaign immediately started circling the wagon on Biden. It didn't. It wasn't that bad. Look at these numbers prove that it wasn't that bad. So this goes to show you what you were told publicly about Joe Biden was not the same as to what was being discussed privately. Joe Biden just admitted, leaving that debate, that Joe Biden screwed up. That they both knew it was a disaster. Yet publicly, you were told that your eyes were deceiving you, that that's not actually what happened. That was not the actual scenario that unfolded. Very, very misleading. And then a question to Jill about her reports that came out after the fact, that she, in fact, was the one that was causing Joe Biden to not do anything publicly. That she was trying to protect her husband, which makes sense looking at the whole situation.
So I saw him all throughout the day, and I did not create a cocoon around him. I mean, you saw him in the Oval Office. You saw him making speeches. He wasn't hiding somewhere. I didn't have him, you know, sequestered in some place. I mean, that's
where she had.
To you when they were describing you as Lady Macbeth.
Yes,
and all of those.
It was very hurtful. It was very hurtful, especially from some of our so-called friends.
Yeah.
Mm. From their so-called friends. Joe Biden wasn't out in public. What she just said there is complete and total nonsense. The final, I would argue, maybe year and a half of the Biden campaign, or the Biden presidency, excuse me. Joe Biden was MIA. You'd never see him. You would go weeks without the public seeing the president of the United States. Weeks. No Oval Office, not leaving the White House, no comments to and from a helicopter or to a plane. The guy was a ghost. This is another attempt to rewrite history. An attempt at revisionism as it relates to history. You and I, the American people, watched this campaign go on. You and I watched this presidency unfold in front of our very eyes. We live in an information age or era in which you can see what's going on 24/7. There's a half a dozen cable news networks that report news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You've got YouTube and Rumble and X accounts that follow this stuff day in and day out, Facebook accounts. We didn't see Joe Biden. We didn't hear from Joe Biden. And there was a very good reason why. The guy was failing to be able to discuss. The guy was failing to be able to articulate thoughts and provide them to the media. And you put that in contrast with what you see right now. You have a president that is speaking to the media almost every single day. Now, they're not traditional press conferences, I'll give you that. But they are situations in which he's talking to people, walking from the White House to the helicopter to fly to Joint Base Andrews. He's talking to reporters on the plane itself. He's talking to reporters when he gets off the plane. He's talking to reporters when he gets to the whatever location he's going to. He's talking to the press constantly. And I strongly believe that that should be the standard. I believe in a time that we live right now, where there's so much information available, there's so much accessibility to information, that the gold standard needs to be a president of the United States that speaks to the American people. And whether you like President Donald Trump or not, you cannot argue that he does not speak to the American people. Now, you can disagree with what he's saying, sure. You can think he's a liar, sure. But you can't argue the fact that he's not transparent and open with the American people. You can't speak to the media that much and not be transparent. You can't speak to the media that much and not have any idea what you're talking about and be hiding things from the American public. Those two things just cannot equal in the do not equal in the exact same space. They just can't and they won't. Joe Biden was hidden, and it was obvious why he was hidden. He was dealing with a failing cognitive ability, and in an attempt to protect him, in an attempt to protect his image, in an attempt to protect Democrats, his wife, and I'm sure other people surrounding Joe Biden, hid him away. He joked, oh, I wish I had been sequestered. Joe, you were sequestered. You were missing for weeks on end throughout the final couple of years of your presidency. You were absolutely sequestered away from the American people because every time you got up and spoke, it was a freaking disaster. Now, it wouldn't be an interview with Joe Biden and the ladies of The View if there wasn't some comments about how is Trump doing right now? What do you think of that, old Mr. President?
Number one. Number two, I think he has done, quite frankly, a very poor job in the interest of the United States of America. I think the way he's dealing, I know you don't want to talk about foreign policy, I'll just be a second. I think, you know, the greatest alliance in the history of the world is with NATO, not a joke.
Yeah.
And he's blown it up. I was able to expand it, we moved it and made up for it. But I'm worried that the impact will be long-term and negative, even if we win again and put it back together again. I think that he has demonstrated to the rest of the world that, I mean, the idea that he has a relationship with Putin the way he does. I've known Putin for over 45 years. The man's not, he's a dictator. I could go on, but and then domestically, I don't understand why is he going after people's health care and Social Security? Why is he doing that? What possible reason is that? How is he saving money? People paid to get into these programs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, I just find
it. Just to be mean, just to be cruel?
Well, all kidding aside, I don't quite get the, anyway, I can be short.
What? You're just going to be short? Well, you can't understand why he's cutting Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid because it's not happening, Joe. I mean, the reason that it's hard for you to understand, the reason it's hard for you to wrap your head around how this is happening is because it, in fact, is not happening, right? That's part of the issue here. You can claim something is happening and it's hard to rationale when it's not actually the case, right? There's no indication that President Donald Trump is cutting Social Security. There's no indication that President Donald Trump is cutting Medicare or Medicaid. I haven't heard that at all. There's been no serious discussion on that I'm aware of. And I can't imagine that Joe Biden's got some insider baseball, but it's a good talking point for the left. It's a good thing that gets people riled up when you talk about Social Security and you talk about Medicaid. It's a very winning political issue for Democrats. So that's Joe Biden on The View. I think a lackluster performance, as I showed you the picture earlier, him shaking his wife's hand in this weird entrance, kind of bizarre, kind of weird. Nothing substantial. Nothing super interesting. The biggest takeaway for me was the fact that they knew that they had screwed up that bad after the debate, yet told the American people that there was nothing to see. That is probably the most eye-opening thing from this whole interview. The women of The View cackling along, patting him on the back and covering for him. Oh, you think he's cutting Social Security just to be cruel? What the hell is Joy Behar talking about? She's the most annoying person in the world. He's doing it to be cruel. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You talk about an issue that is political suicide, and he's just doing it to be cruel. That's the great political insight and intellect of the View program. Phenomenal insight from the ladies there. Can't wait to see more of what they have to say. I'm sure they'll recap the interview over the next couple of days. So there's Joe Biden back after 115 days or so. Last time we saw him really spoke, a couple weeks ago at some event. It's the first time we've seen him. He decides to sit down with the ladies of The View. So that's what we've got here this morning. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and of course 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate the support of the Law Group. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Have a great Mother's Day weekend. We're back with you Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.